Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm the bass player from Coldplay, sitting in for Kyle Swagger today.
I'm a pickle peck of pickled peppers.
Oh, damn me.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, he's here.
I'm here. I don't know where I've been, but now I'm back.
A regular
host.
Wow,
man, it was fantastic. It was fantastic, man. No. It's, yeah, man. No, it's good to be back. Missed you guys. So I'm missing Alex even more because he decided not to show up. So he's going to be the one that's...
No, he's got work. You can't turn work down to do crap like this.
I do it.
Good point.
Oh, okay. Fair point.
Oh, as you can hear, we do have our other two staple people, photography experts, shall we call them, pros, what have you, on the show with us. As always, Chris Forsman from Chicago, Ars Technica. How you doing there, Chris? That's not a Chicago accent, but that's what popped in my head. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing real great. Just had some sausage. Saw the Bears this place weekend. The Bears.
The Bears.
I didn't do any of that.
Bears are looking okay this year, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Not too shabby.
Yeah. As long as Cutler doesn't sit there and wimp out, might have a good season.
That's true.
Just saying.
Double rooting. He's a Purdue alum, so it's
I hate it when there's too many Yanks on this show.
Oh, come on. Come on, Ewan. You're an NFL fan. You used to play the game.
I did, yeah.
Bugger off.
Oh, very good. Very good.
There we go.
A colloquialism.
Ewan, bring a little British back to us. How are you?
I'm good, mate. You?
I'm good.
Good to be back. Good to have you back and... good to be back from my holidays. I did have a very nice holiday, and I'm very refreshed, and I'm very up for getting on with it.
There we go. You look refreshed.
I do. I feel all right. And I'm growing a moustache for November for the cancer awareness, for testicular cancer awareness. And I got to say, I'm quite proud of it after 4 days, because normally it would take me about 6 weeks to get this far.
Are we all supposed to be like growing beards and stuff?
Yeah, it's Movember.
Movember.
And apparently it's on in the States as well. It's...
Oh, yeah.
It's a thing there, too. So it's testicular cancer awareness.
How's it look, huh?
Yeah. Are you doing it, too?
No.
He's just lazy today. He didn't shave.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Shall we get down with the week in photography news, guys?
Let's get jiggy with the cameras.
Yeah. Right on. Canon, EOS, DSLR, 4K video, 35mm full-frame sensor. You going to get jiggy with it?
What?
It does look good, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It really does. I mean, they always stick this crap out around Christmas, and this is the crap that you really, really want, and you realize that the credit card is already maxed for.
We're doing the EOS one, yeah?
Yeah, the EOS one, yeah.
Well, that's still vaporware, though, isn't it?
It's a prototype.
Is it not? Oh, crap. Well, see, then they do this to us.
So you have a camera, they haven't said which Christmas.
Probably 2 years from
now. I'm quite impressed there, because it's usually me that doesn't pay attention and read the stories.
Yeah, I actually thought that this was out already. Well, no, it's me. First week.
No, it's prototype, isn't it? But it's rather good.
It does look good.
So it's going to shoot 4K video as well. Mm-hmm. Which I've got to say, I'm not a great video guy, but just lately I've got into I really do fancy having a go at least, and maybe even renting a 7D or something like that, and having a go at least at... 5D rather, and have a go at least trying to do some video with my lenses and depth of field and that kind of stuff, because it's it's one of those things I've got to try before I die.
Mm-hmm. I can't be a dinosaur. You're going to try and get in touch with the Spielberg inside of you. That's what you're trying to do.
I've got a lot of Spielberg in me.
Oh God, I'm not going to go there.
I got the Spielberg in me. I've got the Spielberg in me. I've got the Spielberg in me.
Well, now, to be fair to Canon, this is a prototype, but it's a product that they are working on. They expect to launch. I mean, it's not exactly vaporware, per se. This is this is just the first usable sample of it.
Incarnation, shall we say, so we all can sit here and drool over it for till Christmas. Well, 2014.
If you look at the red stuff, though, you're talking extremely high end. You're talking custom built bodies and mounts and all that kind of stuff. And it's their video system is rather large within the red range. Whereas this is a standard DSLR. This is as big as my 1DS Mark II is at the moment. So whatever Canon have done, whatever kind of jiggery pokery they've pulled, they've managed to get it into a very usable form factor, which is not a lot like them, really, is it?
No. I mean, we haven't really had a lot of great things to say about Canon lately, you know, in the last few months. I mean, yeah, they make solid stuff, but they're not innovating, and this may change things a lot. I mean, 4K video, and we heard for so long about Red, and we are going to talk briefly about Red today coming up, but Red was one of these things. It was a concept. We didn't know if it was true. Then finally it came out. We all basically, most of us couldn't really afford it, even though it mainly is affordable for what it does. But what are you going to say you shoot this thing in 4K video? Where the hell are you going to play it? What are you going to play it on?
Oh, I think you'd be surprised, mate. I think it won't be long before you see YouTube being able to take 4K.
Well, there's already someone, maybe Sony, maybe someone else, is already building a 4K projector, like a home theater projector. And, you know, like all these nice cinemas you go into that have digital projection, a lot of them have 4K.
Yeah, I think the only thing with... Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're very high-end and they're pretty expensive transmitters, though, aren't they? I mean... If you look at projectors, I always look at projectors a bit skeptically when they're talking about high-end projectors, because it's an emission that then is subject to double distance quarter energy. So the further you have your screen away, the worse and shittier the picture looks. So,
yeah, there's some editing for you.
No, I'm not editing that. You should have moved on, mate. Just, no one would have noticed.
I notice everything. I'm supposed to. I'm the host. Beep. Obviously, this is something we would like to get. Something we would like to get if it does come out. I mean, to play this, and you're talking about we'd have to upgrade equipment and all this stuff. We'd have to get a second mortgage on our home in order to play our own home movies on this thing. Are we talking HHD TV? I'm trying to see the commercial use for it.
Well, it's just like, most photographers will capture a lot of, you know, whether that's with film or digital, they'll capture at a much higher resolution than what they might need in the end product.
True.
But that gives them room to do things like, cropping and editing and different things. So even though, like, today, most people are looking at a high-end 1080p for their HDTV, if you shoot in 4K and then, you know, edit in 4K and then sample down to 1080p, you know, it's like the same thing like in professional audio. You know, you record it, 96 kilohertz,
24-bit,
and then once you're done mixing and editing and playing around and getting the levels right, then you sample that down to 16-bit, 44.1 for CD quality. So
in most cases, I mean, for a CD quality, I mean, there are now where you can get high quality FLAC downloads and stuff. Those are starting to creep out where you're getting more of the bit rate. But again, that's a specialty market. So maybe I'll eat my own words here and say this is for a specialty market. So it looks cool.
Yeah. For now, it's still a high, you're talking produce, movie, commercial, whatever type of production, even some broadcasts you're talking about. But, it's sort of like the cusp now where, like 5-10 years down the road, you're going to see consumers having 4K abilities like in their own home. And this has been coming for probably the last 3 years already. So
I think the thing as well that's different and there's a real shift is that certainly when I started in photography, the your kind of picture format, you're either going to be a videographer or you're going to be a photographer, and the two shall never meet. And that's to a certain degree where I'm suffering, and I really am a dinosaur, because all of the things that I've learned, yeah, okay, there's a few transferable skills, but I'm pretty much a stills photographer, and my eye's been gauged to stills photography, and when I shoot video, I don't think I actually shoot particularly good video. Whereas what you're looking at now is that younger photographers have come through in an age where the price has dropped on video equipment and photography equipment, and they really can bounce backwards and forwards between the two formats with stunning results. You know, there's a lot of people that were photographers in inverted commas who got hold of the SLRs when they had video capability, and all of a sudden Vimeo was crammed with videos that were very, very special. So I'm out of date with it to a certain degree, and there's a certain element I'd like to have a go at this, but there's also a bit of it that if I spend a fortune buying this thing, I'm aware of my limitations of competence, if you like, with artistic, the way I look at things artistically, and I know I probably wouldn't be any good.
It's actually funny you say that, Ewan, because it is not meaning that you're not very good. I think you are good, but the thing about what you said about photographers doing video and doing still photography, well, it kind of came into an age where it's a two-in-one thing now, where if you get a high-grade camera, it also does high-grade video. I mean, even reading the article here, the 5D Mark II, the director of the TV series House used that camera.
Yeah, exactly.
And
was
saying it's the future. So
they shot an entire episode,
smaller,
yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. And I think that's why. I think it's a cost factor, too, because years ago, what it would have cost to get two separate items to do what you can do now in one hand, it is amazing, even though it still is expensive.
Mr. Dalton in the chat room saying, when Ewan started in photography, he made notes on a slate and chisel. Thank you, mate.
Ice burn.
We'll stay in the cinema realm a little bit here, guys. Not for too long, though. Red is makes the Scarlet official. It's 5K and 4K video. Nice price of $9,750. Act now for the Walmart Blue Light Special. You get a $50 mill-in rebate.
Hot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with that, that's, you're talking about the current exchange rate, £7,500-ish. So that's really quite a keen price for what you're getting. Mm-hmm. 4K video, super fantastic. Stills at 5K, I think that's probably still only going to come out about 18 megapixels, which is more than enough. But to get an 18 megapixel camera tied in with a 4K video camera is phenomenal in terms of the hybrid of the two. It looks like a good thing, but you know, in the pictures that are on Engadget, this is what I was saying about the Red stuff versus the Canon stuff, is this thing's an awful lot more chunky than what you've just seen in the Canon. I mean, the Canon's looking extremely slick in comparison, because it's just a standard SLR body, whereas this thing has got, I mean, this thing's looked like it's got a wind turbine on the back to keep it going. I mean, it's... That vent on the back there, you're just kind of like, what? It looks like it's a projector.
That's to cool it.
That's in case the bowl gets hot.
Have you seen this, Chris?
Yeah, but there's something to keep in mind here, too, is that the Red was designed first and foremost to shoot effectively like cinema quality movies. And so some of its design is sort of informed by what has come before in that realm. I mean, if you take a look too, alongside this, EOS model that Canon is showing this prototype of, they also have what they call a C300 cinema camera. And if you take a look at it, it looks much more like this.
That's true.
Scarlet than the EOS does. So.
It's a good, you know, point, Chris. I mean,
it's not to say that it's couldn't be better or couldn't, you know, but it could be worse. You know, for instance, they mentioned the Ariflex, I think, that makes some digital cinema cameras, and they're, you know, like $19,000. So this is like half the price and half the size and shoots as good footage. I mean, that's a pretty significant difference, I think.
What I see here is, and it is, you're kind of right, Chris. I mean, you are right about the C300, the other, the Canon sort of cinema camera. versus the Red camera at 9,000. I think what I'm seeing Canon do here, though, is they're going in two directions. They're going for the guy that's used to that wants the handheld experience with the EOS prototype. And then you're seeing the guy that's, you know, the Nick Spielberg that's used the director camera. We could just call it the director camera. And that's used to this big, bulky thing that's just, you know, that you swing around. It's more of maybe it's more of old meets new at this time. I mean, you may get the new upcoming Spielberg that would rather use something like the EOS. And then you've got, you know, the old farts like us that want to sit here and we like a little bit of weight.
I think the thing that you've got to look at here, though, Kyle, is that you look at the Canon DSLR. Okay, there's going to be a limitation on the amount of video that you can shoot within that potentially as well because of the cards and so on. But it's a consumer-looking product. You look at the C300, and yes, it's high-tech and it's a lot more confusing, but it looks like a consumer-manufactured product. You go back to the Red, and you're parting with an awful lot of cash for something that looks like it's a prototype with a lens bolted on the front.
Really, you think the C300 looks more consumer friendly? Because
I don't know what the ergonomics of it are like, but what I'm saying is it looks like a manufactured production model of the device. Whereas I always think the Red looks just like a prototype that's been whacked up on a bench.
Mm-hmm. I see. You're looking at form factor. You're looking like this looks like the real deal, and Red looks like. Yeah, I just finished three of them in my back garage back there.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is as well, I know where I can buy all of the Canon stuff, including the C300. I haven't got a freaking clue where to go and buy a Red if I wanted one.
That's a good point.
Red,
you can only buy direct.
Well, so there you go.
Direct from Red.
There you go. Yeah. Red, hey, it sounds like Apple.
Red.com probably is like kind of, Red.com is probably a website that that you really don't want to go to, isn't it? Someone must have bought that, surely.
I'm not going there.
I'll go there. I'll report back. Hang on. Maybe sometime.
Well, we talked about the C300, and I think we pretty much talked about that. We were going to kind of move on that from Red, but I say we go on to a little
Hang on. Red.com have only been out for what? 3-4 years?
Yeah, Red. The camera.
Yeah, Red.
Concept, I guess. Yeah, it's about...
Red
Probably
digital
about five
camera.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah, yeah. How the hell have they got red.com? Because that's my bet would be that website went in the 90s.
Do you know who started Red?
No.
Jim Gennard.
Right.
He's the guy who started Oakley.
Oh, that's why the logos look very similar then. Yeah, of course. But
the guy's rich.
Yeah, I'm sure. So he's paid a lot of money for red.com, you think?
No, it's actually, I remember when I was working in a video production department at Purdue, I'm going to say like 2003, and the Red was already, they were already working on like their first, I think it was maybe the Epic was their first camera. But this is like Peter Jackson was shooting Lord of the Rings with their early prototypes.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
They were using, he bought 18 of them, didn't he? There's a comment from Russ in the chat room though saying, "Does anyone really care what it looks like? The quality of the image is key." And I think if you're talking about the fact that you're selling to movie producers and that kind of thing, Russ, I would agree entirely with you. Mm-hmm. What I will say though is that these now are clearly not shooting to those kind of things. They are clearly looking to go towards the consumer market. And if you're going to go to the consumer market, I'm sorry, but sexy sells. People aren't going to buy stuff that looks crap.
I don't think Red is trying to go for the consumer market.
But $9,000, I think they're getting a lot closer to it, surely.
Maybe they're trying to go to the market. They're trying to go to the market for the low, for the guy starting the production room, the guy that wants to do internet video, the guy that wants to,
the guy in film school.
Yeah, the guy that's trying to get into Hollywood.
You see, I'm the kind of guy that would buy a $9,000 Hasselblad. You know, work willing, I would part with $9,000 for that kind of thing because I would make use of it. I would make money from it. I would be worth me purchasing it. So people that are doing wedding videos and that kind of stuff, and people are starting to demand higher resolutions and those kind of things, they would be thinking about if they were got a successful commercial business, they'd be thinking about shelling out. But they're not. They're not making stuff for Warner Brothers that's going to be on general release. They're doing corporate videos, that kind of stuff. That's what I mean by consumer market. They're starting to bleed into that set of consumers now that would look.
Would you say
at
maybe
stuff.
prosumer?
No, I think these guys are professionals, but don't get me wrong. Right. I think what they're shooting as a professional image is stuff that is more consumer-ended, if you like. It's not general-release films or documentaries. Mm-hmm. This stuff is commercial videos, wedding videos, you know, that kind of thing.
I see what you're saying.
Now they'd start to think about selling out $9,000 for it, and I think those people are obsessed with what they turn up with and pull out the bag a little bit more than a general release director of a major movie would be interested in.
Right, because that kind of thing is just always behind the scenes. It's always, you know, no one sees that. They go to the theater and they see, you know, Harry Potter or whatever.
Mm.
Right, they don't see all these like hundreds of guys in the background, you know, holding reflectors and the guy with the camera and the big crane operator. They don't see any of that. So I see what you're saying there.
It's funny. The tech lounge in here in the chat room is saying that the markets are getting closer together, and he took the words out of my mouth. He or she took the words out of my mouth. I think the markets are getting closer to it because the price of the electronics, the components and everything to manufacture to put these things together is coming down. I mean, it is becoming more consumer friendly all around. It's more about, do you want a PC running Windows or do you want a Mac?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point there from Mark again. He's saying, look at the high-end DSLRs costing £1,000. Everyone's got one now. You know, if you spent £1,000 on a camera 10 years ago, I mean, that was an awful lot of money, and you were buying a hell of a lot of 35mm camera for that. You know, even the higher-end Canons weren't costing that kind of money, and now people are shelling it out like it's like, you know, it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just fell off his chair. He's so excited.
No, I didn't. I've stayed where I am. Someone else did that. Not me.
Okay. Shall we move on to our little gidgety gadgety thingies that we like to stick on our cameras and wondering how the hell this thing is going to work? But it looks cool. The Swivy, is that what you'd say it? Swivy, external LCD monitor, swivels with ease. Twitter now.
Go swivel.
Oh, no.
It uses, I don't know how many, it says a AA battery adapter. Ooh, it's included. Check that out. It has a 5.6-inch LCD screen, which rotates in many directions. It is the Kama Sutra of camera LCD screens.
Jolly good.
Mm-hmm.
This thing that popped in my head.
I'm just a little confused, I have to say, about whether I can use it or not. I know it's not on general release or anything yet, but when it comes out, I'm from the story that I read on Photo Weekly, I can't fathom out if it's going to work with all of my Canons or whether it's going to work with any general camera or whether it's only going to work with specific models of Canon. But I've got
the thing about it.
I want one.
Go ahead. I mean, the thing about it is you don't see a name on it. They're just using it with a Canon camera. Now, I don't know how, if there's going to be different adapters for different cameras, like you said, too. But
yeah,
Chris, your take on it. To me, it looks bulky. It looks like it'd be in the way, but at the same time, it would be helpful. It's kind of a give and take thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely situations like when I've done, I guess, like photojournalism type work where you're trying to capture something and there's just no way to say it. I'm short. Mm-hmm. And when you get mobbed with a bunch of press photographers, you know, who are even of average height, they're all taller than me. So I'm stuck in the middle or in the back and I can't see anything. Sometimes it's, you know, I'll just hold the camera up over my head.
Get what you can.
And get what I can. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely times when it'd be great if I could swivel that viewfinder down and see if I'm getting any, you know, because, you know, it's just a whole, like trying to get the angle just right and capture something, you know, you have to take a picture and then kind of look up and see if you got it. And if you didn't, try to rearrange, but you've already twisted everything because you're looking at the screen. And, you know, I can definitely see a very specific use case where that would really come in handy, at least for, you know, like I said, for getting those images in those kind of situations where you're just stuck.
I think the thing with this is I'm coming at it again from a slightly different viewpoint in that I'm an old guy. and I'm suffering from presbyopia, which means I'm slowly going blind at short distance. My long sight's working fine, though. I've now got a set of glasses that I pull on for doing stuff on the screen, or if I need to read up something close, and a little chain that hangs around my neck. You know, I've proper old fart. This thing would be really good for me if I was doing a macro shoot, or if I wanted to do some stuff where I needed to focus manually, because I can't focus manually anymore. If I put my eye up to the lens, I've tried messing around with the little variable thing for focus, and I cock it up every time. And I put a set of glasses on, and I cannot shoot with glasses on. There's something going on there. I've practiced and tried, and I hate it. I just can't do it. So this thing, I would say, I should be able to get a prescription for this. On the National Health, because I'm going blind.
Insurance. Insurance will pay for it. Well, that's a good idea.
But, I mean,
you can't actually get prescription ground diopters for your viewfinder.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, but it's...
just saying.
I'm useless.
throwing that out.
It's easier just to be a grumpy old fart, though, mate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're right.
Uh-huh. There's a point from Mark in the chat room saying, what about if you're left-handed? Well, my view to that is it's your own fault. Yeah,
they don't make left-handed EOS cameras, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
They don't make left-handed cameras full stop, as far as I'm aware. Nikon don't make one.
No, none they don't.
Sigma don't make one. Sony don't make one.
They did in the past, in the 60s and 70s. They made some, and they were very rare and very expensive, but yeah, they just don't do it.
I would say, Mark, take the positive and say you've got your good hand free to do something far more complicated.
No comment.
Well, that's not complicated.
I want to run something by you guys, because I seen this thing, and there's two things that popped in my head. The first one, the obvious one: why don't they just make cameras with bigger viewfinders or the LCD screen?
Cost.
That's what I meant to say. Cost. Okay, fine.
Size. I mean, that screen looks enormous. The screen is almost as big as the camera it's on.
Yeah, it is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. And this is going to bring me my second idea. Why don't they develop a camera? We've got Wi-Fi built in these things, and now you've got the thing broadcasting. Why don't we have a camera manufacturer come up with an idea for an app that you can see what you want to shoot through your iPhone, through your Android device, or through your iPad?
That's out there.
Yeah,
I mean, my EOS 1D S Mark II has got a cable that links it to my laptop. And we're talking about, my 1D S Mark II has got to be a 10-year-old technology now, although my camera's not 10 years old. But as a technology, it can link to a laptop, it's got the drivers, and you can see a live view through on the screen before you press the shutter. The problem with that is the wires are pain in the bloody arse. You can never get one that's long enough that deals with it, because it's USB. And then...
That's why I'm saying Wi-Fi.
If you want to go Wi-Fi, the Wi-Fi adapter for the Canon's a frigging ridiculous price for what it provides you with. I mean, I get far better results with the iFi card in terms of file transfer than I've ever got with playing with those when I've hired them. The problem is, you just need iFi to do live view. If iCar could do live view, they'd have my money straight away.
And Kyle, there is a company that makes an app for iPhone and iPad, and I think there's also an Android version where you run a little server on your laptop that's got your Canon connected to it, and then you can use the app as, like, you can see the view, the live view, and then you can also, like, adjust your exposure settings and trip the shutter so you can walk around wherever you want. You know, it's obviously, like, much better as, like, a studio tool or, you know, the setup's a little more elaborate than what you're talking about, but, I mean, it's technically possible, so it can be done.
Hmm.
So did we just make the Swivvy pointless?
No, I go back to what I said. As an old blind bloke, I fancy this quite a lot. And if it's at a decent price, if that was, say, coming in at $299, and it fitted my camera, I think I'd probably have it. It would be a very useful addition.
$299, you mean £2.99?
Yeah, $299.
Okay.
I mean, there's got to be. There's a bit of me sitting thinking, you know, the purchase technology in this has got to be about $150 in terms of development cost and hardware. So I notice it's got like a Canon style battery on the side there. So that's obviously a rechargeable battery that goes along, like the one that go in the G9 or something, perhaps. But if this came in at under £300, I would buy it. And if it was a lot under £300. I'd buy two.
Chris, obviously your dog disagrees, but what do you think?
It's not my dog. It's my girlfriend's. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there is definitely use cases for this. They're talking about, like, for instance, you know, if you're using a Canon SLR to shoot video, cinema cameras usually have much larger screens. Like, the director or the cinematographer can, like, be checking the framing and everything. Like Ewan was saying, like, shooting, like, macro type stuff or stuff low to the ground. The example that I mentioned, being able to pop that up above your head and just be able to see exactly what you're framing. You know, there's definitely use cases, and I hate to say it's useless. I don't think that I would personally have enough use for it to justify the cost. Mm. But you know, especially if I was shooting a lot more commercial work, I would definitely consider it.
I spend a lot of time crawling around machines and, trying to get low angles and that kind of stuff. And I lie on the floor with my face up to the lens and shoot and hope. And most of the time, one thing that really frustrates me as a professional is I spent a long time learning how to do manual and to track in manual as well. And now I can't do it anymore. And the reason I can't do it anymore is because I can't tell if I'm in focus or not. I mean, I've wasted half a day before now. I've gone to a customer, I've shot for half a day, got back, and I haven't got a single frigging photo in focus. And that's when you realise that you're old, and it's you feel like the pearl handle revolver and the glass of whiskey in the drawing room.
I'm sorry we depressed you with this. Shall we move on and cheer you and
sure.
up? Oh, for Christ's sake, yes.
We can always talk about porn. That always makes them happy.
What could talk about what?
Porn.
Oh yeah, well yeah, porn.
That's not me. That's green. I'm raw.
Oh, that's right.
My blue touch paper is raw.
And you mentioned porn and raw in the same sentence, Ewan. Let's get into a little bit of news. Actually, that this week there's a couple of things that hit us. I think we're going to talk about. And the first one is Google Plus has added editing a whole editing suite. Free, and it looks to do a fairly good job. I mean, is Google starting to say, "Hey, Elements, we can do it just as good or better"? Chris,
yeah. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff. It's based on Picnic. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but Google acquired it a couple of years ago. Mm. I personally am not a fan of it because it's all Flash based. And okay. I just don't run that garbage on my laptop because I like having battery life.
You run it in Chrome. It's native.
Yeah. Yeah. It's built into Chrome, but it still uses, I mean, I don't know I've done some stuff about Picnic in the past, and when it's running on my computer, you know, there's just the fans spool up and it's just eats the battery, so
it's no Picnic, basically.
It's no Picnic for me, anyway. it is a useful tool, and I know a lot of people that's all they use is it's basically an extension of the stuff that you can do with Picasa and Google Photos already.
Exactly, which is all tied around Google. You were trying to drop in a point.
No, I mean, Teresa in the chat room is making a point. If this is Flash, then it's not going to work on any of the iOS devices for a start.
True, mm-hmm. Which is so stupid. That's stupid it. From the beginning.
Yeah, and the second thing is that I quite liked the idea of I mean, the Instagram thing, I'm kind of a yin and a yang in out of liking, disliking. For a specific thing, I think it's not bad, but for other things, I think it's a bit of a bit silly. With this thing, though, it's got the Instagram-like filters, but what's quite nice is it lets you paint them. So when you select the effect that you want, there's a brush tool in there that you can paint them on the certain areas of the image that you want. So again, you've got a lot of flexibility within that. And the color spot color applications that are on the Mac App Store at the moment, they're all hitting sort of $3.99 to $5.99. And this thing's doing it for free online in a web browser. You've got to be a real swine to try and pick some fault and throw the mud over that, haven't you? The only thing
the only caveat
I would say to that is that I know that you guys had a conversation last week on the Mac Show about when you upload email to Google, Google owns it. If you're uploading your photo for touching up here, is there a caveat within the user agreement that says we now own that photo? And that's what would bother me.
Well, yeah, it's probably got L and S right there in the bottom of the photo.
Google are very good at that kind of thing, acquiring stuff via the back door. We'll let you use this cool stuff, but it's ours from now on. Or we have rights to publish from now on.
There is a lot of things about Google that'll, you know, we all think Google, and it is, it's still the best search engine out there. It's, and primarily, you have to wonder, though, how far does the do not evil, how far does that actually go? Right. And there is a lot of fine
Google. What they're doing is not evil. What they're doing is offering something in exchange for something else. It's perfectly fair business. But it's blatantly, they tell you that. And even if you have an expectation that you know it, you know, offering that to you, you should be going in eyes wide open. And Google don't do that as much as they exactly. should. It's not as prominent as it should.
And by God, that's evil.
Well, steady on. Any comments made on the Bagel Tech Network? Purely the comments of those people that make them, not me.
Yeah, here's my comment.
Sue them, you buggers.
I'm just saying, I wish Google was a little bit more, because Google has this persona about them that says, oh, it's Google, man. You know, trust them. You know, it's Microsoft that are evil. And in actual fact, Google's also got lobbyists, and Google's also just as much of a company as Microsoft or Apple as anybody else. Yeah. So I think they do great stuff. I think they do great things for people. But in order to enjoy those great things, read the fine print.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with online stuff in general, though. You know, like Yahoo and Flickr. I put stuff on Flickr that I don't care about. I would never put commercial images up there that I'd expect to try and sell at stock. But having said that, I haven't sold a stock image in 9 months. So it's that's dead.
It's out of focus.
Okay, that's fair point too.
Last thing, guys, we're going to touch on here. Unless, Chris, you had anything else to put towards Google or fear of a lawsuit?
No, I fear when you have nothing to lose, you fear no lawsuits.
Okay, perfect. Speaking of lawsuits, hey, what's better than talking about Washington, D.C.? Apparently, there's a 5-minute photography limit rule in Washington. Taking people's on city strangers on city sidewalks. This is according to the National Press Photographers Association. They're not really satisfied with what the explanation is on this. And I didn't even know there was such a law that even existed I guess this is Washington, D.C. This is the only thing we're seeing. It is in Washington, D.C. Has it have anything to do with politics, that there's going to be a politician walking down the street with maybe somebody who he doesn't want his wife to be seen with?
I don't think so. I was quite surprised by this. I mean, there's a certain element. If you look at the London situation that we've got at the moment with photographers being picked up for terrorism and that kind of stuff, at least there's a sign of kind of a point here where they say, look, if you're hanging around somewhere in a single location with your camera up for more than 5 minutes, we're going to assume that you're not just taking snaps for your holiday. And that's actually a fair point. And 5 minutes is a very long time for that. If they're saying, you know, if you take a couple of pictures and move around and then take a couple of pictures more and move around and take a couple of pictures more, and 5 minutes of doing that on a single building, well, I mean, I would spend an entire day outside the Lincoln Memorial, or I'd spend an entire day outside the White House taking images of it, and just because I'd want to really get the best possible image that I could with the opportunity that I had. And if you're saying I'm limited to 5 minutes for that, I think that's a bit churlish, but if it's like kind of, you know, you've got your camera up to your eye, you haven't moved in 5 minutes, and you're clearly doing something which is more like an opportunist spy-like image because of the fact you haven't changed your location. I think there's a bit of sense in that to a degree.
Well, like paparazzi type of thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
Apparently, the Washington Post said that the law was originally targeted at people who make a living by taking portraits of strangers on the sidewalk. Have you heard of this?
Right. Okay.
It used to be, well, I mean, when Polaroid was a big deal, it was much more common, but they would, you know, they'd stand around waiting for people to come by. They'd take their picture and sell them the Polaroid. And apparently it was like, you know, people that were doing this were kind of like buskers essentially. And DC was trying, supposedly that they were trying to get rid of this, but the National Press Photographers Association is saying, you know, whatever the case may be, the law is too vague and too broad and really unfair. So they're trying to get.
I agree. It is. Go ahead.
Well, they're trying. Yeah, they're trying to get, you know, the DC, I guess city council or whatever it is to repeal the law.
Which is funny though, because honestly, I think in DC, trying to get a law such as repealed or whatever might be the toughest city to actually do it in. I mean, I personally, honestly, you and I think it's crap. If I want to spend 15 minutes outside of the White House and take photos of the White House and maybe catch a glimpse of the president, who I pay a salary to each and every year, whose my tax dollars go to trim the garden, I think I should be allowed a hell of a lot more than 5 minutes.
Said the bloke who lives in the Philippines.
That's right. I know I'm safe here. So
times two.
But I'm agreeing with you, because I said, you know, I'd love to spend the whole day outside the front of the White House too, shooting pictures. But, you know, if you're talking about the fact it's an opportunist thing, and like you say, you're selling, controlling street vendors, I haven't got a problem with that. But that's clearly what the story's saying. It needs to be more specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vague it is. Vague indeed. So something honestly, personally, I'll keep an eye on it, because these kind of things interest me. When we start, particularly when it has anything to do with the media realm, particularly photographers or anybody doing video, when government starts to get involved and starts bending the law a little bit, it's you and I and Chris and Alex, unfortunately, who's in there, that get screwed in the end. So we shall see. We shall see. Are we going to get into questions first?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do some questions.
I'll do that. Yeah, let's do that then. First one comes from Peter. It says, "Hi, gents. I'm thinking of buying a better zoom lens to do a bit more nature photography, and wondered what would be a good choice under £500. At the moment, I have a Canon D600 with a 200mm f/5.6 lens. Not putting the name down, but I'm too embarrassed." This, Peter. Until I can afford a longer lens, how much can I crop the images and keep the quality at an acceptable level? You and I might go ahead and put that towards you, Mr. Canon Man.
£500 is a lot of money to spend on a lens at the moment. I mean, there's some good prices out there. You're talking about Canon's own EF lenses starting at around £135 and going up. Tamron's got some fantastic deals at under £500. And I think if you can get into an L-series lens for £500. I think the 70 to 200 f/4 comes in at about £500. So, you know, there's huge choice on lenses. Go ahead.
Or you could consider the 200 f/8 L lens too.
Right, okay.
Option, I think, at that price range,
same
right?
Same kind of price, yeah. I mean, you're talking about $750, $800 here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, your world's your oyster at £500. You can get a damn good lens, and I would say go down to your local camera shop, get them to get you a good price on something, and get them to let you have a try of a few things, and then do the right thing and buy the camera off them. Have a look at the prices on Warehouse Express or something like that, where you know that, you know, so you get a rough idea of the kind of money you should be paying. And the other thing as well is you know, keep looking on eBay, because I mean, I've got four lenses that I use regularly commercially that I got off eBay. They came through, they were great pictures of the lenses. I could see they weren't scratched when they turned up. There was no scratches on them. Function wise, they either didn't function in the way that the person described, which wasn't an issue to me because I then got them serviced, or you know, they were perfectly functioning anyway. And you can't beat eBay for camera lenses. You can pull out some absolute gems for next to nothing. It's kind of almost car boot prices, because people don't know what they've got.
Good day. Or the people that have just got into it and think, oh, I'm going to be I want to get in, buy the best stuff. And then they realize, you know, a year and a half later that they're not using it and it's sitting in a closet. Yeah, you're absolutely right when it comes to that. Chris, you had one other little point?
I heard you
breathe.
I breathe every day.
That's good.
But no, I don't think
at least once.
We'll find it.
The other half of the question is about how much you can blow up before he gets himself a bigger zoom lens.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the quality. If you've not put the name down and you're that ashamed of it, then maybe it's not a good enough quality lens anyway in the first place. But if you've taken an image that's generally quite good, nice and sharp, good clean colors, and it looks, you know, definable edges at distance, you can probably get that up to about 140% of original size, perhaps, Maybe up to 200, but 200 you're starting to push it on any camera. That seems to be like quite a good guideline. Around 140%, most, if not all, cameras will give you a good enlargement on the crop. But I would say that what you should be doing is cropping in reverse, if that makes sense. So don't crop away more than sort of 40 to 60% of your image.
Chris, you want to breathe some more? Yeah, and that leads us into our next question. Hope that helped you out, Peter. Next question comes from Alex, not our Alex, different Alex. He says, "Dear Kyle, Chris, you and Alex, Peter, Paul, and Mary, I have a simple question about editing images in Photoshop editors. If you get an image that looks to have the wrong levels or hue to it, as professionals, would you correct that by eye or rely more on the software evaluation of what was correct? I'm a keen amateur. I still have a tendency to feel that Photoshop knows best, even though after adjustments, I still don't feel that the image looks right. Thanks for any advice you can offer. Love the show." Thank you, Alex. Chris, I'll point this towards you.
Yeah, I do it by eye. Absolutely. You could look at the specific RGB values or other numbers, but that only makes sense if you have like some kind of color meter or something where you can measure that off the actual object itself and match it. And there's certainly areas, and particularly like commercial photography for like certain products and brands, where that's a very important thing to do. But no, I've never run into that situation myself. And yeah, I just do it by eye. I just do it until it looks right to me.
Well, Ewan, what do you think by, you know, he was saying he's a keen amateur, but he still feels Photoshop knows best. I mean, if you're an amateur, I mean, honestly, personally, me, sometimes I'll just auto adjust. Whoo, that looks better than me sitting there for 45 minutes screwing up an image.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key part, though, isn't it? I think if he's an amateur, he's not trying to give it to someone else and get someone else to like it. He's looking at what he wants and whether he likes it or not. And if it's going on his wall, then if it looks good to him, that's the key part. You know, who gives a toss what Photoshop thinks? It's different for me and Chris, you know, doing the wedding photography and that kind of stuff, because that we're giving something to someone that we want them to think looks good. And as long as he's starting off with a calibrated screen that's at least close to the correct colors, and if he looks at it and thinks that it looks right, and when he's got it up close on the wall next to the paint that he's going to hang the photograph or the canvas on, it looks about right, then he's right. That's it. That is all that matters. The one thing I'd be cautious of is not whether it looks right on the screen, it's whether it looks right for output, because as well, don't forget that your color profiles on your screens are entirely different from your color profiles on your outputs when you send them off for printing or for canvas making. Mm-hmm. Do be aware that you should perhaps change your color profile to Adobe RGB to look at it in a lot more close to CMYK, which is what they're going to print it in.
Oh, cool deal. Yeah. I'm the kind of guy that just sits there and says, auto adjust. Thank you. Woo-hoo. Looks great. I'm guilty. Well, go ahead, Chris.
That works 90% of the time for 90% of people. So yeah, sure. Why not?
Agree.
Would you like to breathe this into our last question, Chris? Yes.
Having an affair and you've got this thing going on in the background that I don't understand or know about? Just...
Ah, a vino.
Oh, God, the last question, please. Goes from Damien from Portland. Hi, guys. Love the show. Thanks for taking my question. What's that?
This is a good one. This is easy.
Okay, great. I've been cruising eBay lately looking for some bargain lenses. We were just talking about this. I found a few, but a lot show the fitting as a T mount. Will these fit my Nikon 70D? Sorry if this is a stupid question. Hey, Damien, I would ask the same question. In fact, I wouldn't even call it a T mount. I call it a T bone. Chris?
I don't want to know why you're cruising eBay for T bone.
I'm looking for a ball quarter, damn it.
So T-mount is a special mount made by Tamron, and all their manual focus lenses in the late 70s, early 80s, had this team out, and then you could buy all these adapters to fit any of the popular, you know, Pentax K mount, you know, the Nikon F mount, you know, all the different mounts that were available at the time. So Tamron could just make one lens, and then you would buy an adapter to fit whatever camera you owned. You can get a Nikon F mount adapter, and it will fit on your 70D. Although I have a sinking suspicion it probably won't work with it. At least the metering won't work. You might have some problem with getting the aperture to actuate, because I believe on most, if not all, of the Nikon digital SLRs that aren't the top end, they only use an electronic aperture control. Only the top end cameras have a mechanical control that'll work with a manual focus lens.
So your gut feeling is saying it won't work.
Yeah. I mean, I would say I'm 94% certain that it won't work, at least the way he thinks it will.
Mm. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry, I thought you were. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say that. Yeah, I'm almost positive that only like the very top end, like the D3X or whatever, is the only Nikon digital SLRs that have the mechanical aperture control. So those will still work with manual focus lenses, but then most of the new ones do not.
Go ahead, Ewan. I know you're not a Nikon man, Ewan. You're a Canon man. It's a shame that Alex isn't here, because he has every known Nikon demand. But
the problem is, go ahead. With this is, I mean, T-mount's a screw thread for a start, and what you buy is a coupling that takes the screw thread that's then got the correct bayonet fitting to go onto Canon, Nikon, whatever. And as Chris says, you know, these things are blank pieces of metal. There's no pass-through of electronics at all with it. The only question I would say from a Canon viewpoint, if you're buying one of these things, is if you can even get it to trigger, because a lot of the Canon cameras now, they you can't get, even if you put yourself in full manual mode, unless they've got data correctly coming back from the lens, they will not allow you to even take a picture, even in full manual mode. Because full manual used to be your override, if you like, of all these things, and you could see what you got and just, you know, hit and hope. But I know for a fact with T2, my 450D and my 1DS Mark II won't even fire. I can't get them to go off. So I don't know whether that would be the case, Chris, with the Nikons.
Mm-hmm.
Would they not even fire in full manual? Probably.
I probably not. It's been a long time since I've been able to do those kind of experiments, you know, since I left the camera shop some years ago. So I couldn't say for certain, but I have a sinking suspicion that it probably wouldn't even work.
You get a lot of what you call it as well, use T mounts, don't you? bloody hell, things that you look at the stars with. I want to say
stethoscope.
I was going to say stethoscope, but that doesn't look at the stars.
Hey, that works too, Dr. Rankin. Go ahead.
Yeah, what's the word?
Telescope.
Thank you. You get a lot of telescopes use T2 mounts.
Uh-huh.
There you go. That's all I say.
There you go. I would honestly tell, I mean, I'm no professional here. I don't know anything about it, Damien, but I would say we always talk about going into a camera shop, take your camera in there, see what's going to work for you. You know, try it out, let them try it out. I mean, support the camera stores out there. I mean,
I'm not sure you're going to find a camera store with any T-mounts in it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. It's an eBay thing, definitely.
Oh my!
The camera shop I worked at, so there's still some T mounts.
Okay.
We got all kinds. Well, maybe of stuff.
Try your luck. Spend a Saturday afternoon, the entire day, Damien. Go find a T mount and see if it'll work for you. So that's best we can tell you. Because it'd suck if you ordered it from eBay and it didn't fit or didn't work. So. Hey, questions, guys, you got them. We love answering them, as you can tell. Send them to us, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We'll get your questions on as soon as we possibly can. I know that they stack up and slowly we do get to them, but we will eventually get to them. So
everyone
please
gets
email
a reply,
them.
Though.
Everybody does. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Even Ewan.
I'll email a reply even if we don't use it on the show.
Yeah, it's usually Ewan. I don't know if Alex does too. I think
the only flawed part of that plan is you only get my opinion.
It's free. They can't complain.
Here. Uh-huh.
Right? Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. BageltechPhoto@gmail.com. Now, you and I've been out of the loop for 9 years, 7 days, and 32 hours, and you tell them what's going on with UK2.net right now.
Well, we just had a competition.
I know that with the Nintendo thing. And
yeah, we just had a competition for a Nintendo 3DS, and if you bothered to enter, you got a 25% discount code. So you can use that going forwards forever. But if you didn't enter, well, you're stuck with 15%.
And that's still for now, right?
Yeah, you get to it for now. It's finished. You get a 15% code, and the 15% code is BagelTech. So when you check out, use BagelTech, you get 15% off whatever's in your shopping basket. If you're transferring a domain in, there's a DNS management charge. That's normally sort of £15 or £20. If you put in BagelDNS as your offer code, that disappears. As well as though, so you can use both codes. But if you like what we do and with the BagelTech Network, with shows and that kind of stuff, you know, there's lots that you can do to help. And people have offered, you know, Carl's doing all the guests for the shows and things like that now, which has been an absolutely fantastic,
very professional thing. Carl, you know,
it is. You get a letter, very, don't very you, with a thank you very much, and
I really appreciate that. I mean, I felt like, you know,
not like the arse that was doing it before.
Yeah, I don't know who that's. Some guy named Rankin. I don't know who the hell it was.
But, I mean, one of the things you can really do to help us is, you know, like retweet stuff on Twitter and tell your mates and drag them in and subscribe to all the shows and download them all. Even if you watch us in the chat room, please go and get the video shows and that kind of stuff. But
also, the big thing, I accept cash payment direct.
Yeah. But
don't worry, Chris, Western Union's on its way.
Just to finish the sponsors advert, if I possibly can, we wreck it. No, but just to really support us is support UK too, by keeping, you know, sales going through from our site, using our click through on our homepage, buying your stuff that you need from them through us. You're keeping BagelTech going. And please remember to use the offer code, because lots of people forget to put the offer code in when they get to the end and check out. It's silly not to. And the thing is that UK2 ring us up and send me emails telling people to do it. It's crazy. But please support UK2, because, you know, the amount of bandwidth that we're sucking up. We had 130,000 downloads last month, and it was a great month, but it was very, very expensive on bandwidth.
Yes. So please support UK2.net. or we're not going to have any Christmas around here.
No.
And also send cash.
No. Yeah.
There is. It's funny you say that, though, Chris. There is a way other people can't support the BagelTech Network. Go to bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk, and you guys can get something for yourself over there, a T-shirt, a mug. I don't know if we have any hats over there yet, but I know we got mugs and T-shirts over there. If you're a Mac fan, if you're a Photo fan, a Big Show fan, chances are you're going to find a shirt that's going to be just right for you over there.
It's bageltech.spreadshirt.com,
I think. Co? No, .co.uk.
.co.uk. Yeah, but you have to do bageltech.spreadshirt. That's right.
Yeah, bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk. Is that what I said? I don't know what I said.
That's what you said.
Thank you, Chris.
We'll put a link. There's a link on the homepage. There you go.
Yes, it's at the bottom of the page. Go over there, and then, of course, you get whatever you want. And I believe £5 goes to us. Is that correct?
Every shirt sale gives us £5.
Which is, you know, and that helps us out immensely as well. So we missed Alex this week, we must say. I seen him tweeting, so it's pretty obvious that he's home, but just didn't want to join us. It's okay, Alex. We forgive you. Maybe we'll see him next week.
I don't. I don't forgive you.
Chris doesn't, Alex. Till he gets his Western Union.
Yeah.
Chris, where can we get a hold of you?
Just don't. No.
Okay.
No, I'm a contributing writer at Ars Technica, so you can go to arstechnica.com and read all kinds of nerdy stuff that I write every day. Or you can, you know, hit me up on the Twitters at ForzMac. And I might send you a snarky response.
Most of the time you will, especially if it's 2 a.m. there.
Yes.
From experience. Yes. Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
At Ewan Rankin on Twitter, EwenRankin. And you can get me on at BagelTech News on Twitter as well, as, or you can go to ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography work. And I'm really frigging good.
He is really good. Even and out good of focus, looking. It's great.
And good looking.
Oh, he's great. He's great looking. Look at that new hair, man. Love it. That's the relaxed Rankin look. And Alex isn't with us today, but you can find him at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. And I believe it's twitterything.com is his website. If anybody's bothered, you can find me at Twitter at Kyle Swagger or at kyleswagger.com. We will be back here next week for another edition of Bagel Tech Photo. We are so looking forward to it. We hope you are as well. Have a great weekend. We'll see you soon.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Now, here's the interesting thing. Last night, we had Eric Lanigan with What Americans Say, and it was great. And we're talking about Google Maps going through parks. And I said, well, that could help the cottaging industry. And he's like, what's cottaging? I said, well, you need to look it up in Google. And he went and looked it up. Because they don't have cottaging in America. Mm-mm.
What is cottage? Why don't you just tell us?
It's a gay sexual liaison in public toilets. But
oh, yeah, we have that.
I know you do, because George Michael got done for it, didn't he? So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. There was a senator that got busted for it. He was remember the tap on the foot thing? Apparently there's like a signal.
A really
where you like
foot
reach
tapper.
Your foot over. You reach your foot over into the next stall and tap your foot, and that's like, hey, come over in this stall and let's get it on.
Let's get jiggy.
And yeah, this apparently straight, married, heterosexual, homophobic senator, quote unquote, was totally busted in some truck stop. Bathroom.
Let's get it on.
Your tax dollars at work, sir.
Oh, it is.
Don't forget about it.
As long as he's doing his own time, who cares?